Hello, folks, and welcome to The Farm, a podcast dedicated to culture, parapolitics, and high weirdness in all its many forms. This is your host, Recluse, a.k.a. Stephen Snyder, the longtime curator of the Bizep blog and author of A Special Relationship, Trump, Epstein, and the Secret History of the Anglo-American Establishment. And as this is our subscriber section, I assume you guys know the drills now as far as the website links are concerned. All right, another State of the Union for you guys here. Just did one a few days ago, it seems like, maybe early last week or this week or something like that. But yeah, news is certainly unfolding at a rapid rate here. Obviously, a lot of it centers around Ukraine, which is going to be at the heart of the discussion that I've got on deck for you guys. Though we're also going to talk a little bit about Elon Musk too, because he just seems to be cropping up everywhere right now. And this would include my personal life. I had seen more Teslas during my time in San Francisco than I had ever seen in my entire life previously, to say nothing of the whole sort of cult around Tesla and Musk that seems to be prevalent throughout that whole area of California. So yeah, I can't seem to escape Elon Musk, even when I have ended up on the other side of the country. He finds a way time and again into the news cycle to perpetually remind me of his presence. I suspect this will only become more extreme in the coming weeks and months here, guys. But before getting into that, let us start the show proper, and then I will launch into some of the developments. So here we go. Definitely a complicated week for Joe Biden and the United States national security apparatus that has congregated around the State Department, the DOD, and so forth within his administration, largely centered around such institutes as the Atlantic Council, the World Economic Forum, New America, and several other of these types of neoliberal outfits. They had a lot to celebrate at the beginning of the week. I mean, many of them were still high off the destruction of Nord Stream 1, which, you know, we're not really trying to disguise the fact is a major boon for the American empire. Blinken, what the Secretary of State had even mentioned, that it represented significant strategic opportunities or something to that effect. For practical purposes, it more or less ensures that American hegemony over continental Europe, the EU, is ensured at this point. We basically have them by the short and curlies now that their ability to even negotiate with Russia for gas has been taken away through the destruction of Nord Stream. I mean, there have been some reports since the bombing that mostly from the Russians that they may attempt to rebuild it, but again, you know, I think best case scenario for that, that's probably still a couple of years into the future before something like that comes into play. But yeah, there's no question. I mean, you know, if the EU was not already a pretty thorough vassal of the United States, it certainly is now. It's It's definitely a move that has really capped a lot of the Russian economic influence, the soft power that it did exercise in the EU, which has really been, I think, a big part of this ongoing conflict here. I mean, the United States, which is one of the reasons why you have people like Henry Kissinger coming out here claiming victory already, is that the US has managed to largely drive Russian economic interests out of Europe through the initial wave of the sanctions, through SWIFT and so forth, through restrictions on the sale of gasoline and so forth, sanctions, that kind of thing. And then finally with the Nord Stream bombing, which we're all but claiming responsibility for, it would seem. Russian influence from an economic standpoint in Europe has been thoroughly decimated, really, since the onset of at least the last decade, if not sooner. I mean, you could possibly go back to the conflict with Georgia in 2008, but certainly with the Euromaidan incidences in 2013, 2014, and a lot of the events leading up to that, the United States and Russia have been vying for influence in the EU quite vigorously, and especially in Eastern Europe. So thus far, the United States has succeeded in securing a lot of their economic interests, but the Russians have now resorted to hard power and have seized a pretty considerable amount of territory and peoples within the Ukraine thus far, and may have done more long-term damage to the US economic order than many within our own government are willing to admit. And on that note, we get to the next instance, I think, of tit for tat and all of this, which was the sudden decision by OPEC, driven by the Saudis, to cut oil production by roughly 2 million barrels per day. It's a pretty hefty cut there. I mean, it was already coming, in fairness, amongst wide speculation that they were going to cut oil production with the declining demand for it. But the expectation was that it would be around 1 million barrels per day. The 2 million really seems to have caught everybody off guard, though. If you've been studying developments in Saudi Arabia over the last couple of years, this probably shouldn't come as a major surprise. But in brief, MBS, the current ruler of the Kingdom of Saud, was really quite a vigorous supporter of Trump, along with his staunch ally in the Emiratites, MBZ, I believe. And certainly there is a lot of evidence of foreign collusion amongst the Trump campaign, when it includes the Emiratites and Saudi Arabia, along with Israel. All three of these regional powers do appear to have played a pretty significant role in helping Trump pull out the 2016 election. And after Trump was in the White House, MBS proceeded to brutally crack down on other factions present within his family and the broader Saudi government. Of course, famously, quite a few of the of his extended family were taken to gosh, that one luxury hotel, and were murdered. Some of them were tortured for several weeks as they turned over assets to him. I believe this would have been in 2017 or something like that. Of course, there's also the whole thing with Khashoggi, Jamal Khashoggi, and the dismember of his body in Turkey, and a lot of other intrigues. Certainly the Game of Thrones has been especially gruesome within Saudi Arabia over the past couple of years. And what it seems to have amounted to is that a lot of the Bush-leaning factions within Saudi Arabia have been pretty decimated in the last couple of years, which I think is one of the major reasons why Saudi Arabia has increasingly moved outside the sphere of influence of the neoliberal slash neocon kind of Western faction and has moved increasingly more into sort of the multipolar right-wing group in recent years. So when Biden was elected, there was initially a pretty major push to punish Saudi Arabia, I suspect principally for their support of Trump, but obviously nominally the reason was given is some of the murky details about Khashoggi's death and some of these other things. But anyway, given geopolitical developments, the Biden White House soon found that it could not entirely dispense with Saudi Arabia, which led to a recent trip there by Biden to try to smooth things over, resulting in the now highly comical fist bump between Biden and MBS. So yeah, obviously the Saudis were not especially impressed with what Biden was trying to sell them, as this sudden cut in production is really going to hurt on a lot of levels. I mean, it's on the one hand, I mean, it's an obvious humiliating action for Biden. This is, of course, coming at a time when he and the Democrats were finally starting to recover a little bit at the polls here in the States, as, you know, we're heading into an election cycle now. I think actually we're only about a month out or something like that. So it's a bad optic on the one hand. On the other hand, it's going to affect Americans at the pump. I mean, oil prices are usually a major factor in swaying voters here. People tend to notice when the price of gas is going up or going down more than a lot of other things in the United States. And certainly in recent weeks during the kind of summer months here, I mean, gas prices have been low. This has enabled a lot of people to do probably more traveling than they've done in a few years now. So I think that, you know, all of this has really kind of benefited the Biden administration and the, you know, general perception that we might have been heading back a little bit to quote unquote normalcy. But you know, this is probably going to provide a sudden jolt to the system leading up to the election. Gas prices are probably going to go up dramatically in the coming weeks here as we prepare for the 2022 elections. Obviously, Biden is already trying to counter this move. This involves releasing even more of the strategic oil reserves. And again, you know, this is a really common tactic used by any number of presidents from both parties over the years to drive oil down during politically advantageous times, i.e. typically in the late summer, early fall months leading into an election. So the fact that he would be tapping into the strategic reserves right now when oil's at record highs, hardly a surprise. But we have done quite a bit of tapping, and you know, we're arguably heading into maybe some uncharted waters here with the situation in Ukraine right now. So it's maybe not the wisest time to tap into the strategic oil reserves to the extent that we have. But again, it could be a moot point as well, based on some of the other things afoot, as we will get to here in a minute or two. But yeah, this is just, you know, it's not a good thing for Biden. And then on top of the ongoing pilfering of the strategic oil reserves, he's also had to go to Venezuela and ask Maduro on more oil to offset the situation with OPEC. And this could also probably lead to some sudden deal with Iran potentially as well. But the Venezuela thing is, you know, I mean, again, you guys got to keep in mind the U.S. had just kind of tentatively, you know, supported a coup down there, I think, or maybe that was Bolivia. But I mean, you know, we've been trying to overthrow the government there for years now. So, I mean, this is just a really, I mean, it's all, you know, I mean, if this wasn't really playing out, I mean, this would almost be like duck soup, wag the dog kind of absurdity. But you know, this is It's all really happening, guys. But yeah, it's certainly interesting to see that and the kind of desperation that it belies that we're willing to overturn literally years of US foreign policy in a matter of minutes over this decision by OPEC, which definitely makes me think that there's a lot more concern about this than they're letting on. And again, another factor in all this too that I want to quickly point out is the ongoing debate over the actions of the Fed chairman Powell and his continued persistence on tightening interest rates. This was something I'd addressed in the last State of the Union. And again, it looks like he will continue on this course. The job report has continued to be strong. I mean, I think we're down, we're under two job openings for every worker, I think, looking for a job, but it's still close to two. The labor market is still strong and worker wages still appear to be pretty stable, which is fairly remarkable given the extent that he's raised interest rates lately. Of course, as I got into in the last State of the Union address, I think this is one of the big reasons why Powell has been fanatical about raising interest rates. They're trying to crash the economy to intentionally drive down the wages of workers. One of the kind of few saving graces that's unfolded in the last couple of years is that workers have actually achieved some real gains in terms of purchasing power and even bargaining power that they've basically been losing for the last 30 years or something. So it's definitely on the minds, I think, of a lot of corporate CEOs to try and do as much as they possibly can at this point to stop this trend dead in its tracks, and certainly raising interest rates, slowing the economy down, be a great means to people to stop considering higher wages and working conditions and just be thankful that they have a job again. Much as that glorious environment that existed after the 07, 08 economic crisis, which so many of them thought was so wonderful. But again, as this relates to oil, interest rates aren't really going to affect the price of oil so much. But I mean, I think the hope was that by slowing the economy down, you would cut into the demand for oil even further, which would help keep the price of oil low at a time when, going into the winter months, they desperately need energy costs to kind of remain at least fixed. I mean, they're already going to be high no matter what, but I mean, I think the hope was that they would not rise much beyond where they're at now going into the winter months. Otherwise, they could spell out some just, real disaster for the EU. But yeah, this is going to become even more difficult now that OPEC is going even further by cutting the supply of oil, which could keep the price even higher or help drive the price, in fact, higher now. So yeah, there's a lot of quid pro quo here. And I mean, there's also a possibility that Powell might have been hoping to force their hand by his continual tightening presence. As I, noted before, there is some speculation that Powell and several of the big New York banks like JP Morgan have been subtly working to undermine some of the economic or agendas of the Davos slash World Economic Group. Again, that's highly debatable, but it is interesting to see, a lot of this playing out. Obviously, some of the Fed moves have really dealt some major blows to their counterparts in Europe. And certainly, I believe there's an investigation that was recently launched against BlackRock as well, which is also interesting in light and some of these other intrigues. But anyway, on the note of intrigues and quid pro quo and so forth, it just continues to play out, guys. I'm recording this on Saturday, October 7th. On this particular day, there was a large explosion on a key bridge linking Russia to the Crimea. So, which Zelensky, I believe, has already claimed credit for. So, yeah, that's interesting in light of the fact that it happened. just a few days after the OPEC Plus announcement, which I'm guessing the Russians also probably played a role in influencing the decision on that matter. But another interesting development too is there was a major train network that was brought down today in Germany due to quote unquote sabotage. Again, this is Saturday, October 7th, 2022, when I'm recording this. So yeah, it's just really interesting here to see this kind of stuff play out. Certainly, it does seem like these sudden instances of attacks on infrastructure and other things like that are becoming much more frequent as the Ukrainian situation becomes more and more tense here. But certainly, I was left with the perception that the Nord Stream thing was a game changer, and certainly the decision of OPEC Plus too. And I should probably point out as well, I mean, another big factor about this too with the OPEC Plus decision is, I mean, this could also constitute really another major death blow to the petrodollar. I'm guessing that this is probably another major issue at play here with Russia potentially pushing for OPEC to cut oil production. Again, I mean, so much of the US dollar status as a world reserve currency is dependent upon it, being used as the principal form of exchange for oil, a commodity that pretty much every, major economy needs, and so they also need dollars to get it. But thanks to a lot of the sanctions that we put on Russia at the onset of the conflict, this whole system is rapidly breaking down. Interestingly, the Russians, it's come out lately that they actually had started to accept payments for quite a few foreign exchanges and cryptocurrencies as well, which is interesting. Certainly, if you've been following the crypto markets in the United States, they've also been taking an absolute beating along with stocks throughout this year. Major just, crash, and I mean, almost all the major coins. But again, this is actually coming at a time where it seems like there's much more real world use of cryptocurrencies as a medium of exchange as opposed to, investment tools. Again, there's also a distinct possibility that this is another means of economic warfare essentially being waged by the United States, knowing that the Russians would probably have to resort to cryptocurrency to maintain their economy. I mean, it would make a lot of sense to target that particular market by the United States. So that could potentially be a factor playing out in crypto markets as well. But just in general, this is leading to a rapid decline in the petrodollar system as more countries have started to buy gas from Russia through rubles and other means of exchange. And now you've got the whole situation with OPEC deliberately trying to drive the price of oil up against the wishes of the United States and the EU. I mean, this is already leading to a lot of discussion of any cartel legislation being thrown at OPEC or something like that. I mean, this could ultimately result in the breakdown of the OPEC system and with it, more or less the petrodollar. So this is another factor that's playing out here. Again, I mean, a lot of figures at play right now, forces at play, would probably like to see the end of the US dollar as the world reserve currency, no doubt. But there's, I think, still a lot of at play as to what is going to replace it, whether it's going to be some kind of CBDC, central bank digital currency, or it's going to be some kind of cryptocurrency, or just maybe some combination of crypto and commodities or something or other. But yeah, it's an interesting situation to see unfold, no doubt. So we've had all the sabotage and all this other stuff going on. Well, get into the really weird here, guys. Let's talk about Elon Musk for a moment. This guy is definitely at the forefront of a lot of the things we've been discussing here, and he has certainly had a strange summer, to put it mildly. going back, I think I can't remember if it was the spring or the summer actually when it was announced that he was intending to buy Twitter. But it was sometime in that general time frame, and it's been a kind of on again, off again courtship since then. It was recently announced that Musk was on pace to once again buy Twitter at his initial offer, which has in turn spurred more outrage from a lot of Twitter employees already. Certainly, Musk has been generating a fair amount of controversy in recent weeks due to his presence on Twitter. Not that this didn't obviously start in recent weeks. He's had a lot of controversy on Twitter for years now, but I suppose ratcheted up. This comes with, a poll that he had recently held over the Russian-Ukraine conflict and, more or less trying to see the amount of people who would have preferred pursuit of peace as opposed to continuing the conflict, which obviously was denounced by a lot of the usual suspects and all of this. And gosh, most recently too, he just had another one up that's probably going to spur a lot of, oh yeah, Musk proposes Taiwan becomes Chinese special administrative zone. Similar to Hong Kong. So yeah, that's probably going to generate a pretty harsh response from the whole Atlantic Circle crowd, to put it mildly. But they're not the only ones jumping on Musk. Actually, a lot of people have been criticizing him lately. I think even Henry Kissinger recently got into some throwing a little bit of dung on old Elon Musk. And this is related to the performance of his Starlink communications devices in the Ukraine, which I believe they're kind of a drone-like device that connects to satellites and supposedly will help the troops on the ground or that kind of thing. Of course, there's been reports coming in for a while now that these devices were not working especially well in the front lines. And now there's been even more reports that have come out that they have been shot down and are just in general not providing especially great support to the Ukrainian forces. But I mean, basically, they connect with mobile phones, they provide satellite internet access, and basically, this was supposed to be a way for the Ukrainian forces to have, quick, timely on the ground intelligence as to like what all was going on in the field down there. And it's not working the way that they had intended. They've been described as having quote unquote catastrophic outages with this kind of stuff, and that they're just not able to get the information that they need from them. But this brings up another interesting thing. Of course, it's only been recently that the Starlinks have come under attack, like in the last week or so here, even though this has been kind of an issue now for a few months at a minimum. Most likely this is kind of timed with some of Musk's other statements in the media of late. But going back to like April or May, when the Starlink devices had first been sent out there, there were interesting reports coming out that the Russians were planning on using electromagnetic warfare in the Ukraine to counter these devices, which has been pretty widely downplayed by a lot of sources. But there is definitely some compelling indications here that some kind of EMP or something has been used to jam, if not outright, shoot some of these devices out of the sky. And these reports have been coming in now for, like I said, a couple of months. Again, there's a lot of, it's hard to say how much of this is, hyperbole or what, but this is from Defense News by Stephen Lousy, which was published on April 20th. Har har there. Brigadier General Ted Clark, Director of the Air Force's Electromagnetic Spectrum Superiority Directorate, said modern wars will increasingly involve electromagnetic warfare, particularly to shape the battlefield when conflicts begin. Dave Trimper, Director of Electronic Warfare for the Office of the Secretary of Defense, pointed to space accessibility last month to swiftly stymie a Russian effort to jam its Starlink satellite broadband service, which was keeping Ukraine connected to the internet. SpaceX founder Elon Musk steered thousands of Starlink terminals to Ukraine after an official sent him a tweet asking for help keeping the besieged country online. The next day, after reports about the Russian jamming efforts hit the media, Starlink had slung a line of code and fixed it, Trimper said, and suddenly that Russian jam attack was not effective anymore. From the EW technologist perspective, this is fantastic, and how they did this was eye-watering to me. Okay, so there they were kind of boasting about how they were able to counter some kind of electromagnetic attack, but more recent reports suggested that they have not been as successful. From July, there's all these stuff coming about Russia using top-notch electromagnetic guns to quote-unquote stun drones, which again is interesting. So yeah, and again, I kind of go back to comments that I had made earlier, or not earlier, but on my prior State of the Union podcast that I had done earlier in this week about the real possibility of an EMP attack unfolding here at some point. I mean, this is one of the reasons why these sort of reports are, to my mind, really eyebrow raising, because on the one hand, they are indicating that the Russians do have some kind of electromagnetic weapons on the one hand, that may well have already been deployed and used in Ukraine. Certainly, I mean, if these reports about the drones are accurate, and I mean, it seems like at least the American media is acknowledging that there is some kind of Russian electromagnetic weapon at play here. Again, you know, we can always debate how accurate this stuff is, but it's very concerning, because I mean, if they have miniature versions of these weapons that can take down drones, I would imagine that they, you know, probably have much larger versions that could potentially target things like, you know, nuclear power plants, let's just say, or other crucial components of the infrastructure. And again, given you know, a big part of what we have been discussing in this particular installment of the State of the Union has been the attack on various crucial infrastructures, be it Nord Stream, be it this bridge linking the Crimea to Russia, or, you know, the German rail system. It certainly seems like this kind of stuff is becoming more and more frequent. And again, this is, you know, I think one of what will probably be seen as one of the horrors of modern war that we're potentially entering into here. We're going to have to deal with things like EMP devices that could potentially destroy large swaths of our infrastructure and, you know, require a very minimum amount of operators to deploy these weapons against us. And also drones, for that matter, too. There's actually been increasing effort to try to secure crucial infrastructures in both Europe and the United States against drone attacks in recent weeks. Of course, you know, if you followed some reports, there have been accounts of these strange drone swarms suddenly occurring in key infrastructures under the some of the major gas facilities in Norway, which is now producing most of Europe's gas, experienced them. And I think at a U.S. nuclear power plant, maybe in Alabama or something like that, was recently also the site of a drone swarm. But yeah, guys, I mean, this is what is just profoundly disturbing to me about this conflict. You know, I don't know that we, in terms of like a war with Russia, I mean, if we were, should be concerned about, you know, is concerned about like a conventional invasion force coming over with like troops or something like that, as I mean, just a lot of attacks against the United States proper, especially against the infrastructure and things like that. That can be done with a lot of this, you know, these technologically advanced weapons, with, you know, again, very minimal commitment in terms of human resources, you know, but nonetheless, they can do a lot of damage in a lot of different ways. And again, increasingly, as this kind of stuff is played out and the Ukrainian conflict and more of it seems to be moving into Russia proper, which again is another aspect of this that should just be scaring the hell out of everybody. I mean, the Russian state pretty much considers Crimea a part of its territory now. They're going to see this as an attack on the homeland. And I mean, again, I just bring this up again. This is coming on the heels of Dugin's daughter. Remember that being assassinated just outside of Moscow just a couple of weeks ago. And some other instances of sabotage that have been occurring in Russia proper. So, this is very much, I think, raising the stakes to the point where the Russian government may seriously be considering an attack in Western Europe or here, God help us. I mean, certainly if we continue in this direction, it's going to get really ugly, more so than it already has. And it's sadly, something that a lot of the policymakers seem gung-ho and pushing for, despite the, let us just say, precarious position the United States finds itself in right now. I mean, we may have hegemony over Europe, but our control over much of the rest of the world is slipping away, as the recent decision by OPEC demonstrates. And there is just so much internal conflict and strife in this country right now. It is staggering. There is just no sense of national unity whatsoever. So it's not a good footing to be on for a country that seems hell-bent on trying to start a war with at least one, if not two, nuclear-armed superpowers. So, interesting times indeed. I suppose on that note, I will sign off for now. As always, again, I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for your support, your listenership, for reading my books, for everything. Hopefully, I am providing you guys with some good services here. It means a lot to me, and it's important to me that you guys appreciate what I do. So, with that, I say, as always, to you all, good night and good luck to you all.
Baby, pick me up, out here in my wiki up. Sick and tired of fucking up, sick and tired of pushing luck. Voodoo blue got juice in it, swallow what I'm about to spit. Done got 86 from the copper queen for singing this. I took it to the goat chain, we were ready, my people there, they feeling me. Down low, skin low, more characters than Stephen King. Said I'm just working at the quarry, y'all, I ain't in a hurry, y'all. Come on, baby, pick me up. Out here in my wiki up. Stuck down in this stick. Hut is hot as hell, I tell you what. Put it up and knock it down. Moving on that big around. Come on, mama, jump down. Turn around, do it for me. Stick it out. Say 1, 2, 3, Geronimo. Jump, baby, we gotta go. Hands tied, blindfold. Jump into that battle zone. I said it's time to get the fuck out. Cause they done let the wolves out. They're coming with that heat, mama, shooting up the street. Mama, fight or flight, adrenaline. You feel that little tingle in your feet. Mama, no retreat, mobilize your whole fleet. Hit the street, tell me that you good for it. You want peace, go to war for it. Say 1, 2, 3, Geronimo. Jump, baby, we gotta go. Scream it with me, scream Geronimo. Hands tied, blindfold, jump into that battle zone. Come on, baby, pick me up, out here in my wiki up. Got y'all on some Aztec bullshit, never getting used to it. Got bales of weed and catapults with Santa Muerte diffused in it. Shoot it over the castle wall, the Mikra can't patrol it. Off from Berlin to the Great Wall, the greatest walls are bound to fall. So legalize it, Vato, about a Genghis Chapo. Come on, legalize it, no need to advertise it. The weed cures the cancer, everybody, even Carter realized it. But pharma don't make cash money when we rock that stash, honey. Best believe they sooner take it out your ass, Sunday. Come on, the man ain't getting well healthy with people getting healthy, right? Talking about high AZ, talking about that BMC. We got no economy if we ain't got no enemy. The Popo and the BP, DHS and Army, Honeywell and L3, razor wires, UAVs. Officer, excuse me, please. Said I'm just eating my burrito, not the droid you're looking for. See you all on payday, see you at the Safeway. Bisbee lives on crazy checks, BP on that fast pay. I sing my hooli blues, y'all. I don't make the rules, y'all. Just paying my dues, y'all. But I'm just saying, sorry hippies. If Great White Father don't make payroll, forget about your maypole. It's just that one